Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Greetings and welcome inside the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre, ready to go for the next 3 hours. Our first show together, dude, man. How you doing?
Yeah, never worked with this guy before, people. If it goes poorly, it's not my... No, I'm very excited. I know Jason's work, obviously, long time Fox Sports Radio superstar. I'm just trying to live in your world, man.
Oh, okay, so if you live in my... Okay, so we're going to talk about the Knicks a lot, right? Because, finally, for like the first time in like 1,000 years, the Knicks are good. Right? That's a really big thing for me. I'm very happy right now.
Yeah, well, as a Knicks fan, the last time they were good was the Jeremy Lin era. I refuse to call it the Carmelo Anthony era. And it's been a minute, you know? So I'm right there with you. The first basketball game I ever attended, I'll never forget it. Madison Square Garden, 1985. Lakers-Knicks. First game I ever attended as a young guy, and I just fell in love with both teams. So I became a weird Lakers-Knicks fan, the only one on the planet, probably.
Wow, that is really weird. It was like whichever team was doing well at the time, okay, I'll be. But you hit it right in the middle, like the Knicks were just starting to get
Patrick
good.
Patrick Ewing, yeah.
You saw a lot. How many Hall of Famers were in that game you must have seen?
Magic, Jabbar. My dad was a big Jabbar fan. Patrick Ewing. Those were like the big three. James Worthy, obviously, was on the team as well. But, yeah, it was a good time to be an NBA fan. And, you know, I have a feeling we're going to talk a little nostalgia in the NBA later in the show. People on – Jason, just to preface it, people on social media are so angry with me. What else is new? For this Reggie Miller stuff, which we'll get to later. The hagiography of Reggie Miller is a little bit over the top. And, of course, he's taking a shot at the current young guys, which is all these old boomers want to do these days. Jason, I'm getting sick of it.
All right, wait, hang on a second. I got to look up. Hey, geography. Hang on. I got to look up what that means. Hang on. That means, okay.
I thought I'd drop like a $9 vocab word the opening segment just to remind people who they're dealing with here on Fox Sports Radio.
That was a pretty good word to drop. I dig
you.
That. I
Thank
mean, that's
you.
Like you must have gotten like a perfect score on your SAT on the verbal part.
I think I got like a 900 or something like that.
When it was up to 1,600 or when it was like the new one?
No comment, Jason. Okay. I was the kind of kid who decided like, ooh, I should probably work my butt off in journalism as opposed to try to get good grades in high school and college. But I was on the AB honor roll in seventh grade. So I will put that on my tombstone, I think.
It's not on your Twitter profile?
No,
AB honor roll, seventh grade?
I left that one off, actually.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yes, we will definitely get to that Reggie Miller take. That is an awesome story. We'll get that coming up. Probably top of next hour. But right now, we got to start with the latest from the NBA. We'll get to Steph Curry in a couple of seconds. As everybody waiting with bated breath for the result of the MRI of Nugget star point guard Jamal Murray, who went down in immediate pain after he hurt his left knee driving to the basket last night in the last minute of the Warriors win over the Nuggets, and it was really difficult. It was a play where he was going in for a hoop. They were down 7. He comes down on his left leg, and it immediately crumples, and here's how it sounded.
Rebound down to Jamal Murray. Less than a minute go. Three-pointer would be nice. Murray right to the rack. Gets hammered, and he'll go. They're just going to say he lost that. That's a challenge.
He's hurt. Jamal's hurt.
And he's grabbing his left knee, and he is in severe amount of pain.
This is a worst-case scenario, sports fans.
There it is, Nuggets Radio Network. Mike Malone came out to check on Murray right after. They brought out a wheelchair. He was able to get off the court but could put no pressure on his leg. Malone said after the game, the locker room is incredibly down right now. There's no answer. We'll wait for the imaging. And I'll tell you what, Jay, this is a Nuggets team where I remember seeing that, you know, in the bubble into the playoffs last year, and I said many times, the era of the Jazz and the Nuggets in the West is coming. All right, they got young players that have locked in. They're locked in for a few years, and their era is coming. They are two terrific teams. And here come the Nuggets, who have been playing extremely well. But if something happens, they lose Jamal Murray. I don't know where they go from here. I mean, this is such a huge blow.
Devastating for the Nuggets. And, you know, Jason, I have this podcast, Straight Fire, on iHeart. And I had said a couple weeks ago, after the Aaron Gordon trade, that the Nuggets were the best team in the West. Now, obviously, LeBron and AD are not healthy. But you look at that Nuggets team and how they played after getting Aaron Gordon, and this team was stacked. I mean, they were just torching teams. Murray, of course, we know how heroic he was in the bubble. That series he had against Utah when they were down 3-1, one of the most heroic series I've seen in a while from a player. Two games over where he dropped 50 points, three over 40. I feel awful for Denver right now. This is just terrible news. Very sad to start the show with.
Yeah, now hopefully it's something where it could be just a hyperextension and it's, you know, it's a couple of weeks or a few weeks and he's back for the playoffs. But all of those non-contact things that happen, you just hold your breath and wonder. And he just means so much to this team. You know, as good as Jokic has been playing and he's become a dark horse MVP candidate. Well, you know, one of the 150 guys in the MVP candidate. You know, right now Jokic is 13th. Now he's 6th. Now he's 7th. And he's been terrific. But man, I'll tell you what. Murray makes this team go, and he's the guy in the playoffs, obviously, when guard play becomes more important, that he does have those huge games. And I don't know where Denver goes without him. Yes, they are stacked, and that's great. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they can figure something out. But, man, they lose him. It's hard to look at the Nuggets and say, hey, Nuggets can get out of the West. I mean, because this is a loaded Western Conference. This will be loaded 1-6 in the West this year, and I don't know how they get out of it.
Well, in addition, you touched on it. The MVP situation is very up in the air, right? I mean, LeBron's been hurt. Joel Embiid's been hurt. I had Frank Isola come on my radio show Saturday morning and said Jokic was his number one, you know? And, you know, I saw a great stat, Jason. 48 of the 65 MVPs have come from number one seeds. Well, Denver ain't sniffing the one seed without Jamal Murray. So can Jokic win the award? Do we have to go back to Joel Embiid, who's injured and, you know, they're fighting for the number one seed in the East? I don't really know where we go. Listen, people aren't going to want to hear this. A guy named Zion Williamson won't win the MVP, but oh my gosh, have you seen what the guy's been up to? Like the NBA this year, Jason, I don't know how big of a regular season guy you are. You know, I joke that life is too short to watch January college basketball, but NBA in the regular season this year has been pretty sweet. I mean, so many good comebacks, guys dropping 45, 50 at the drop of a hat, and Jamal Murray is a joy to watch. I wish him a very speedy recovery.
Yeah, it's weird. With MVP, it's like as soon as we say, all right, this guy's the front runner, something happens. And they wind up getting hurt and or, you know, because it was Embiid for a while, right? And then he got hurt. And then it was Harden. And it was, okay, oh, Harden, look at what he's doing. And then it was, okay, now Harden's out and the Nets win without him. So, it, you know, as well as he's playing, you know, can he really be the MVP? Then it became Jokic for a bit. Then it was LeBron, but then LeBron got hurt.
Yeah.
So it's like every few weeks, every month, there's like a new flavor of the month.
If Damian Lillard cracked that list maybe at some point. Some people are against that, but his clutch numbers have been insane. I will just add this on the Nuggets. You know, Jason, last year they had Gary Harris, Jamal Murray starting in the backcourt in the playoffs, and then Jeremy Grant at small forward. Well, if Jamal Murray's gone, all three starters will be toast from last year's great playoff run. Okay, Jeremy Grant obviously thriving in Detroit. Gary Harris just got shipped to Orlando, and now Jamal Murray's hurt. So this Denver postseason run may have just gone up in smoke if Jamal Murray's out any significant amount of time.
Whew, guys, that West is absolutely loaded. All right, we'll keep you posted on the Jamal Murray story. Again, an MRI today, a very shaken Nuggets locker room, and this shakes up the playoffs, clearly. But also in this game last night, we saw a big history from Steph Curry, who now becomes the all-time Golden State Warriors leading scorer. He passes a guy maybe you've heard of. Take a listen.
17,782 for Curry. Dribble drive. Curry goes in, drives the layup. It's up and good. And there he is, Stephen Curry. Now the all-time leading scorer in Warriors franchise history. He shines brighter than the Big Dipper as he passes Wilt Chamberlain into history.
Warriors Radio Network on the call, part of a 53-point night for Steph Curry. And, you know, really quick, he was for a hot minute. Curry was an MVP favorite because it was the storyline of, boy, if Curry can lead the league in scoring and somehow single-handedly get the Warriors into the playoffs, oh, maybe Steph Curry's the MVP if he has this kind of year. But clearly the Warriors are just hoping to get in the play-in games at this point. I look at this, Jay, and I see this big achievement from Steph Curry, and I go, Warrior fans have to enjoy it now because eventually in the next year, he's going to go play someplace
else.
Whoa! I mean, look,
what?
I know We like to think of him as a forever warrior, and certain players like to think of him as forever players. But look, everybody changes now in the NBA. Everybody goes someplace. And the Warriors, the era of their dynasty is over. And you're not going to get big players to come join them now. It's an aging Curry. You don't know what Klay Thompson's going to be like when he comes back. And Curry wants to keep winning. He doesn't want to sit here and hoist jumpers and score 35 a night into obscurity, you know, into his mid and late 30s. So eventually he's going to know, I have to go someplace else. And he'll leave as, and whatever happens, just like LeBron leaving Cleveland, he goes back. He won the championship there, so he's always going to be Cleveland's favorite son. He'll always be a Warrior, but he'll go someplace else for the last few years of his career. He'll go and team up with somebody. LeBron's already trying to court him. He'll be that shooter, you know, a much better version of a Ray Allen near the end when he was such a big deal on title teams. And I say after one more year, Steph Curry's going to say, I can't just keep getting my ass beat like this, you know, every single night and losing, and he goes someplace else.
All right, Jason, I'm signaling for a 20-second timeout here. I cannot believe you just disrespected Steph Curry and put him in the same class as Ray Allen. Are you kidding me? A two-time MVP in Curry. I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, it's fun to think like, hey, LeBron, he's going to recruit Curry. But like, Curry is the Warriors. When you are the guy and you've won three chips and two MVPs, you don't go to play with other guys. They come play with you. And there was an interesting report out yesterday. And again, I don't want to give something that's not from Woj a lot of credibility, but there is speculation that Kawhi Leonard is not thrilled with the direction of the Clippers. Okay, we saw their second-round gag job against Denver last year. Paul George is signed long-term. They had to because they gave up all those picks. Kawhi, not so much. And if they happen to go down in the second round again, Clippers lose to, whoever, Lakers, Suns, Jazz, whoever it is, is Kawhi sticking around? And the report is that, hey, the Warriors would then be interested in pursuing Kawhi Leonard. And I think it's fun to talk about Curry teaming up with some people. He was able to recruit Kevin Durant to come play with him. And now he's going to go play with someone else. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I can't imagine him going to Milwaukee to play with Giannis or Phoenix with Booker and Chris Paul. No way. I can see someone wanting to go to Golden State. You know, it's a desirable, the Bay Area, lovely part of the country, a little expensive. But Jason, I can't see Curry leaving. You really think there's possibility there?
Because everybody does. Could you see LeBron leaving Cleveland? No, but LeBron left Cleveland.
Well, no, wait a second. Hold on. It's Cleveland. Come on.
It happened. Yeah, but he's from there. I mean, he's from there.
But it's
Cleveland.
He left. You know,
look, I love New York, but I left. You know, I left for Los Angeles. I wanted sun, and I didn't want snow anymore and all these things. I left for L.A. Look, everybody leaves in the NBA now. And if it was 4 years ago and Steph Curry is 28, 29, and here's, Klay Thompson is the other Splash Brother, and he's still a guy that can score 20 in any quarter. Hey, and Draymond Green is still a guy that actually shoots the basketball and affects the game, then yeah, that's still a big draw for anybody. But now you're looking at a team in which Draymond Green clearly isn't the same guy. You don't know what Clay's going to be. And here's Steph going, okay, go here and play with Steph. Are you really going to jump in and join a title contending team? Or are you joining a team that's kind of wheezing along a bit and you're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle? I mean, look, I'm with you on how great it is in Golden State. We don't give them credit for the culture they created, for what Steve Kerr was able to do and take this team and Steph Curry, who was an all-star caliber player, and turn him into one of the greatest shooters we've ever seen, where he scores suddenly 30 a game. But that was 4 years ago. And now it's going to be, okay, guess what? You have to come here to a bigger market, whether it's L.A., whether it's someplace else. I mean, look, he may say, you know what? Hey, let's all team up someplace else. Let's go to Charlotte. You know, I can get a couple of guys and go to Charlotte and play, and I can go there and I can go back. All these things would be on the table for him. And because everybody goes, and we've seen this, I can't put it past for a second Steph Curry would leave.
Yeah, so he is from Charlotte, and there was some chatter that, oh, maybe he wants to go home the way LeBron went home to Cleveland. I look at ownership, front office, coaching. That stuff matters, I think, to stars. And, you know, I don't want to act like too much of a loser here at the outset, but when Durant went to Golden State, I instantly went on Cowherd's show, and I was pumping up, Kevin Durant's the best player in the league. And Durant saw it on Instagram, and we start talking and open a little friendship there. And I asked him point blank, like, what are you doing going to the Knicks? Why would you go to the Knicks? This was when everybody was speculating he would leave Golden State for the Knicks. And he essentially said, what do I care about the owner? Like, what do I care about that? Essentially, I'm Kevin Durant. I'm bigger than that. But notice he didn't go to the Knicks. He went to the Nets because Kyrie Irving went there. And, you know, they were able to pick whoever they wanted as their coach to an extent. I think Durant had a large say in bringing on Steve Nash, who he worked with in Golden State. But, you know, you could argue, yeah, that there is some say in the players, but I find it really hard to believe that Steph Curry would bail on Golden State. I think it's easier for him to recruit guys there than to Charlotte. Although Charlotte is one of the best stories in the league. LaMelo Ball, Gordon Hayward, scary Terry Rozier. Man, that would be, I don't even know where that would rank. That would probably be up there with LeBron's decision to go from Cleveland to Miami, right?
Now, let me ask you, are you sure you were actually friends with KD and it wasn't a burner account?
Yes, no, yeah.
You sure it was KD? Okay.
It was indeed Durant, yes.
All right.
Yeah, I know he has multiple burners. I am a Curry fan. I should probably preface that. I started a podcast way back when I was on, I started this website, The Big Lead, and I had a podcast there. The first guest I had was Steph Curry before he had signed that like $78 million deal. He had been injured in his early years in Golden State. That was when you could get him on your podcast.
Right.
And I've been such a huge fan of Curry. I ran into him at my gym 2 summers ago after he had the injury. Super nice guy. And I'm just a huge fan of him on and off the court. This guy's done so much for the league. And he's a great ambassador for the Bay Area. He's the greatest guy in that franchise history. You know, no disrespect to Wilt and Rick Barry and all those other guys. It's Curry, right? He is the franchise.
Twitter at How About a Fresca? Jason at Jason R. McIntyre. Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre in for Dan and the Danettes today. Hey, where other vans stop short, Mercedes-Benz vans go far beyond, from their customization options and cutting-edge tech to their 5-star sales, service, and financial support crew. Mercedes-Benz vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. So go the extra mile by taking that all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. So again, we'll have more on Jamal Murray. Jason and I on opposite sides of the Steph Curry conversation again. Weigh in Twitter at How About a Fresca, Jason at Jason R. McIntyre. Coming up next, we got some NFL coming your way. Hey, a huge retirement a day ago. Is this guy headed to the Hall of Fame? Psst, probably not. But is he headed to the Hall of Fame? We'll find out coming up next right here, Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Fox Sports Radio, the Dan Patrick Show. Jason Smith and Jason McIntyre in for Dan and the Danettes today. We had a huge retirement in the NFL a day ago as Julian Edelman, postseason hero extraordinaire, hangs him up, retiring after a very good NFL career, and I'm saying very good and putting that in air quotes. Joining Jason and us now on the hotline to break it all down and all the big news in the NFL, senior NFL columnist for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Prisco CBS. It's at Prisco CBS. It's Pete Prisco. Pete, good morning, man. How's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing good, man. Hey, listen, Edelman retires. I saw your tweet, you know, Hall of Very Good, not Hall of Fame, but people are starting to make his case for it. Well, you know, how do you break this down?
Yeah, I don't even think it's close, to be honest with you. I think he was a very good player who did a lot of good things in the postseason. But when you really add it up and look at his numbers, he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, and nor will he get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, there are so many other receivers that are fighting to get into the Hall that are clearly better than he is. And if he wasn't, you know, one of those guys that played on those good Patriots teams, it wouldn't even be consideration. So, no, Hall of Very Good, not Hall of Fame.
Hey, Pete, hey, it's Jason McIntyre. I'm just curious, why do you think people are enamored with Edelman? Is it more his story that he was a converted quarterback from Kent State, 7th-round draft pick, who went on to win the Super Bowl MVP and played with Brady and dated celebrities? What is it about Edelman that even has him in this discussion? This guy was never, ever a top 5 receiver in the NFL at his position.
Yeah, and I think you hit it. I mean, I think when you see a guy who made himself into a key part of some of the great teams this league has seen, and he was a former quarterback and you know, transitioned to slot receiver and then also played some defense at times. I mean, there is a special story there, and it's, he was a guy that worked his butt off and made himself into a really good player, and people respect that. But you got to cast that aside when you're looking at the Hall of Fame stories, because there's a lot of guys that did that, that worked to become great players and deserve it more than he did. But I think that's exactly why he is so revered, particularly in the Boston area.
You know, the thing I look at is that look at all these receivers that, you know, this is more about the Patriot way, I think. The Patriot way on the field is that all these receivers that Brady has played with over the last 20 years, some guys came and they put up these incredible numbers and they went someplace else or they before and they weren't the same. So it's like, okay, so how many guys can you say were truly great receivers when I can watch Julian Edelman go, boy, here's a pick and a rub play where he's wide open. Here's a pick and a rub play where he's wide open. Because the Patriots did that a ton over the past two decades.
Yeah, and again, when you look at his numbers and you dissect his numbers, they just don't warrant him being into the Hall. I mean, what is he, 156th all-time in receiving yards? That doesn't warrant you being in the Hall of Fame. There's a lot of guys, Paul, who have significantly better numbers. And look, you can go through guys that are just playing now. Is he better than Antonio Brown? No. DeAndre Hopkins? No. A.J. Green? No. I mean, on and on it goes. Julio Jones? No way. I mean, there's a lot of guys playing now that have better shots to get into the Hall than he does. So, great player for what he did, but just not a Hall of Fame player.
All right, Pete, let's pivot here to the NFL draft coming up here in a couple weeks. And I got to say, I'm stunned at this Mac Jones to San Francisco stuff at 3. It feels like it's got to be the greatest misdirection play ever. Although a lot of smart people are saying, hey, Shanahan had loved Kirk Cousins over RG3 dating back to Washington when he was on the staff there with his dad. And it's going to be Mac Jones over Justin Fields. I'm still not buying it. You know, my eye test says Justin Fields is the guy. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing what you're hearing, but my eye test is the same as yours. I don't get it. And I've watched Mac Jones for a long time. He was a kid who was – I used to live in Jacksonville. He was there. He came up through the high school ranks. So I followed his career closely. And Mac Jones is a good, solid player, and he will be a good NFL quarterback. But the guy with the ceiling is Justin Fields. I mean, you know, people talk about Mac Jones hasn't played a lot of football. Neither has Justin Fields. And I think there's a lot more – growth there for him, and these notions that he doesn't get to his second read and he's not great in the pocket. You know, if you go back and study the Indiana game, which everybody kills him for, the blitz really impacted him. And yeah, maybe he needed to do a better job with protections, but they hit him and came after him. And he still threw for over 300 yards and rushed for 75 yards in that game. It wasn't like it was an awful game. So I get it. And, you know, where were all these people that are now praising Kyle Shanahan for the notion that he might pick Mac Jones at number 3, trading for 2 first-round picks to go up and do it? Where were they in January after the national championship game banging the drum for Mac Jones being a top-5 pick? They weren't around. But now that somebody in the league is saying it, everybody's jumping on board and saying it's a great move. Mm. I don't get it.
Well, I don't know. Chris Sims knows Kyle Shanahan pretty well. I got a feeling when he says stuff, you know, he's not just pulling it out of thin air. You know, how much of it is, Pete, is that, okay, the Niners want to hit the ground running, and Mac Jones they see is more of a NFL-ready quarterback to come in and play than Justin Fields, who might take a little bit more time?
You know, I don't know if that's the case, to be honest with you. I think when you look at it, why would he be more NFL ready? Because he's played about the same number of games. I don't see it. Maybe their idea that he fits in their offense might be something that they believe. I don't see that either. I think in that offense, you got to be able to move and get outside the pocket. And Mac Jones didn't do a lot of that in college. It's not that he can't. I mean, he did run 4.7, but he doesn't look like it's something he's comfortable doing, whereas I think Justin Fields, much more athletic, mm-hmm. can get outside and throw the football on the run. So I don't understand it. I think they're going back and doing more work on Justin Fields, which leaves the door open that it might change and go Justin Fields. Or maybe that's the guy they really want. I can't – when you look at their pro days, if you go watch the pro day that Mac Jones had, it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
It was average in terms of what pro days are. And I'm not one of those guys that gets wowed by pro days because you're throwing against air. But his wasn't very good in terms of some of the other ones. So I think that has to be a little concerning to the 49ers.
Yeah, how much of this, though, Pete, is simply ego on Kyle Shanahan? You know what? Justin Fields threw six TDs against Clemson. I don't care. I'm going to get a guy that I can get in my system and coach him up, and he's going to be the best quarterback in the league. We know Shanahan has a colossal ego. It barely fits in the state of California. I don't know. I mean, this guy really does believe that he could take a Mac Jones, who, by the way, had more All-Americans starting around him than the entire Big Ten and Big 12 combined on offense, and he could just make him an amazing quarterback. Are you buying it?
You know, you mentioned the ego, and I think ego cost the Falcons the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I mean, had he just gone run, and I've actually had arguments with guys on his staff, if you had run the ball twice and or even taken a knee twice and kicked a field goal, you have a Super Bowl ring. But the arrogance got in the way there and cost them the Super Bowl with the Falcons. And so, yeah, he does have a little bit of that. I you know, in talking to guys around the league that know him very well and guys that have coached with him, I think some of that has been gone because, you know, it's left him a little bit because he's matured and aged a little bit. I do think he's a brilliant offensive mind, one of the best in football. But to sit here and blindly say, oh, Kyle Shanahan's going to draft Mac Jones and therefore it's going to work because we believe everything he does and everything, you know, John Lynch does. They passed on Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes to take Solomon Thomas.
Ah.
Let's not forget about that. I mean, you know, they did do that. Now, they had signed Jimmy Garoppolo, but does that mean that now they don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is very good? I don't think Mac Jones is going to be much better than Jimmy Garoppolo in that offense, where I think Justin Fields has a chance to have a much higher ceiling. So if you're the 49ers, I don't see how you do that and take Mac Jones.
Pete Prisco, senior NFL columnist for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, with us here on the Dan Patrick Show. Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre, in for Dan and the Danettes. All right, so when it comes to quarterbacks, Pete, if I give you this bold prediction for the draft, tell me the percentage chance you think it has of coming true. All right, we think we're going to see quarterbacks the first four picks. Could we see quarterbacks eventually with trades up the first five picks in the draft, with Trey Lance being that fifth guy off the board?
It's possible, and the reason it's possible is if the Falcons or take a quarterback at four, and then you're sitting there and you're the Bengals, you have your selection of guys you want, and you could move down and still get one of those guys. I mean, if it's Penei Sewell they like at left tackle, or if it's, you know, Jamar Chase or Kyle Pitts, then if there's a team that wants to go up and get the fifth quarterback, you could move down a couple spots and still get one of those guys. So it is definitely possible. I would look, the Falcons are the tough one. What do? You hear Arthur Smith is all in on Matt Ryan, but maybe the, you know, Terry Fontenot, the new GM, is not. And so they're going to have a tough decision. Do they stay put and take Kyle Pitts? And if you, or one of the offensive linemen, if you look at Kyle Pitts, you look at Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith loves to use two tight end sets, and he'd love to have a nice pass catching tight end to go with Hayden Hurst. So that would make some sense there as well, to make another push on that offensive side of the ball. Could you imagine Kyle Pitts, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Hurst in that offense with Matt Ryan throwing the football? I mean, they will score a lot of points. So that's a possibility. But I also think there's some people in that building that are pushing to take the quarterback.
Let me ask you, Pete, about owners. You know, the situation in Philadelphia got really ugly really fast. There was a story in The Athletic about Jeffrey Lurie having weekly meetings with Doug Peterson and having to answer questions. Well, we're now hearing Arthur Blank in Atlanta is totally all enamored with Matt Ryan still. He doesn't want to kick his guy to the curb, and they won't pick a quarterback at four. I'm just curious, where are you on these billionaires voicing their thoughts on football, with the teams? And I know it's their right, given that they own the team, but is it the right thing to do? Is it smart to meddle if you're an owner on an NFL team?
It happens more than you know. I mean, look, look, it is their team, and they do have that right. And I know sometimes these coaches get frustrated, but you know, remember who you're working for. You know, just like if your boss came to you and said, look, I'm going to call you in after every show and tell you what I didn't like and what I do like, and you're going to do it my way the next day. You're not going to like it, but you're probably going to do it. So it goes on way more than we think. And everybody always thought it was just Jerry Jones that meddled because he was the GM of that team. No, a lot of them get involved and voice their opinions. Most of the time, they let the football guys do the work and then come to them if there's a tie, and then maybe they lean one way or the other. It sounds like in Philadelphia, Jeffrey Lurie much more involved than that. And, you know, the politics of a front office, and that's the thing that happens in this league. the egos get, you mentioned ego before, the egos get in the way. And even if there's a great working relationship between a GM and a coach, a lot of times ego messes that up. And, I do it this way. I get credit for this. He's talking about the players. I can't get enough players. The coaches start complaining about the GM not getting players. The GM starts complaining about the way the coach is using those players. And on it goes. And that's where the owner has to step in and get involved. So ultimately, it comes down to ego. And the teams that can handle that usually are the ones that keep on winning.
Pete, did you and I ever work in the same place? Because that story about sitting in after shows with people telling you what they liked and didn't like, that's very familiar to me. I don't know if we ever worked the same place together at some point.
To be honest with you, when I used to do radio way back in the day, there were always those that would, after you're done, they'd say, hey, maybe you should do it this way. No, I'm doing it that way. Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
You can follow him on Twitter at PriscoCBS. That is at PriscoCBS. Pete Prisco, as always, buddy. Thanks so much for stopping by. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Jay, you want a great story about that, right? So, before I worked in here, I worked across the street at ESPN. And there was a time when you always sat down once a week with one of our managers and they listened to a segment of your show and they told you what they liked and didn't like, right? Which is okay, I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but all right, that's fine. So, and to tell you how crazy it was that one time, I forget, there was a story, something weird happened during the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley Field. And so it became a topic. And Dan did it on his show. And, one of our managers who did these meetings with you wrote out, hey, a topic like this is awesome for sports talk radio and don't be afraid to do that and get outside the box and do it. And so we're like, okay. And I did the same topic. I did differently on my show, but I did the same topic. So it comes time to listen with my manager for it. And I do that as a topic. Right. And he, that's the part he listens to. And he says to me, I feel like you got away from sports a little bit too much with that topic. And I didn't really get any sports there for the 3 or 4 minutes to that topic. And I said, but wait, wasn't that a good topic to do? You wrote an email out saying that was good, that, for Dan did it. And it was really good to do. And you'd like to see more people do. And he goes, yeah, but you got away from sports too much. And that's when I knew. I said, OK, I'm just not going to be able to win. Wow. And this is just how it's going to be. And that's when I knew things like that were just ridiculous to do. I don't need those.
Yeah, there's a difference between constructive criticism, which I definitely embrace. I love constructive criticism. How are we going to get better? It's not like we're Kobe Bryant who can maniacally watch film after every game and see where you screwed up. I don't think that exists really in radio. So all we can do is hope to get constructive feedback. But if you've got some guy who, I'm assuming this guy worked in radio, do you want to give his name or no?
Oh, yeah. No. There's no need to.
Okay. So was he a former radio guy? Was he a successful radio guy?
Yeah, he was a successful radio guy. And he came and it was just, I was stunned at some of the things that was said.
Huh.
I'm like, okay, really? This is how we're going to do it?
Yeah, that's
all
weird.
Right.
I think the audience likes it when I go off sports for a little bit on my Saturday radio show. Now, that maybe a 5-day-a-week show is different and the time slot matters, whether it's drive time or mornings. But I think people like that window into your soul and who you really are. I mean, if you could get in their car or their headphones for 30 minutes a day, I think you really can have an impact on what these guys think about you. And yeah, I'm definitely pro going off sports. I mean, we can go off sports next segment if you want to, Jay.
Yeah, hey, we could definitely do that. And I hear you on that because it's always a way. Look, you got to realize that there's a lot of choices out there and you want people to know you. And I want to kind of tell you about my life through sports a little bit and what's going on when you're doing shows. It's okay. There's different choices out there that you have. What makes you different? What makes you unique? And this is why we do a show here and why I have a show here and doing different things. So it's really important that people get to see that. And I understand okay, you're away from sports too much, but I'm like, this is like 3 or 4 minutes. This is like when Doug Peterson would get criticized after a win, right? Like the story you had from The Athletic yesterday,
yeah,
where Jeffrey Lurie said, why didn't you throw the football more? Well, it was 25-mile-an-hour winds because we were playing in Buffalo, and we won the game. What does it matter that we didn't throw the football more? All we got to do is win the game. I don't understand why you feel like we need to throw the football more. Like, that's a criticism that I just don't get. If you have a player that you're not using and you think he can be great and you're paying him a lot of money and you think and you're not winning, hey, we got to change things up. But when you're winning and you're doing pretty well, and, you know, Peterson's a guy that kind of won the Super Bowl,
yeah.
I think you would give him a little bit of, okay, the guy knows what he's doing.
So this is just a tiny, tiny thing. So a few years back, I was able to invest in a basketball team in Australia, in the NBL, the league where LaMelo Ball played last year and RJ Hampton. And I went to a game. They had come to play the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis. So I fly to Memphis, hang out with some of the other owners. One of them's a former college basketball player who played briefly in the NBA. And we sit down at dinner after one of the games. And then the coach shows up with his assistant coach to have dinner with the owners. And I got to be honest, it was one of the most eye-opening dinners I've ever been at. Now, I'm a minority owner, very small slice of the pie, but just hearing the owner-coach exchange was just like so illuminating, because I'm like, wow, holy cow, like, we can say stuff and the coach kind of has to do it. Now, I said that in my head, but I really said nothing here. And it was one of these good relationships where the coach is a tremendous smart mind. He knows what he wants to fit his system. And, you know, us as owners were like, oh, this is cool. And to me, that was one of the coolest dinners I've ever been at. Second coolest might be Billy Packer, you know, the former college basketball announcer.
Oh, sure.
Who everybody doesn't like. I was able to sit next to him at a dinner in New York City one night, and he just had stories galore about everybody. And I was a college basketball nerd in the 90s. But at any rate, not to go off track, like, I like hearing these owner-coach exchanges because, you know, as a Jets fan, and you know as a Knicks fan, there are meddling owners in that team. Those guys want to be celebrities, whether it's to be in a rock band like a certain guy you know with the Knicks, or just Woody Johnson, who's a buffoon with my Jets. Like, you meddle, you're not going to go places. You think Robert Kraft was meddling with Bill Belichick?
I can just imagine going to that dinner and the coach going, okay, I got to listen to the Straight Fire podcast so I know about my owner. I got to do all these things. I got to watch FS1. I got to see where I got to be able to talk to this guy. I got to know what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm sure that was crossing the coach's mind. You know, one of the most accomplished coaches in European basketball in the last decade, worried about Straight Fire. By the way, great interview today on Straight Fire with Charles Robinson, who says, now listen, I don't know if this is going to become a thing, but apparently Aaron Rodgers is legitimately beefing with his GM, like openly in Green Bay. Now, I think we have that on our rundown to talk a little bit about the Packers later. But, you know, I just want to look big picture and zoom out, Jason. When you start seeing this NBA player empowerment, right, and players are saying, I want to play here, I want to play with that guy, I want to do this, are you starting to think that it's coming to the NFL? Russell Wilson, after a great run, hey, you know, I'm going to go traded. Here are the teams I'll go to, you know. And now Aaron Rodgers beefing. And it looks like Aaron Rodgers eventually will leave. Like, Tom Brady beefing. I'm going to go to Tampa. I'm going to win a Super Bowl. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on player empowerment, Jason, and whether you think it's a good thing for sports or bad.
We got some player empowerment. We got that coming up in about 40 minutes with Aaron Rodgers. But speaking of the Jets, because I'm with you right there as a, you know, a 40-year Jet fan, Sam Darnold had some incredibly interesting comments to make as he was introduced as a new quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. We got that and more NFL on the way right here. Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre, in for Dan Patrick, Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fox Sports Radio, the Dan Patrick Show. Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre, in for Dan and the Danettes today. Two Jasons, two Jets fans who can give you a very unique perspective right now on what Sam Darnold said a day ago, or a little less than a day ago, is introduced as the new quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. Now, Darnold has always said the right thing since coming into the league, no matter what kind of situation he was in with the Jets. But the biggest thing he said, you know, he made some eye-opening statements a day ago, saying that it was really tough dealing with the trade talk that surrounded him in the previous couple of months. Take a listen.
When I heard the news that they wanted to trade me, it was tough. You know, anytime you're not wanted somewhere, that's always, you know, a tough pill to swallow. But then it was the opposite feeling. You go from being unwanted, and then all of a sudden the people in Carolina, you know, wanted me and obviously traded for me. And you go from being unwanted to wanted, and things didn't work out the way that I wanted in New York. But I was just so excited for a, you know, a fresh start and new opportunity. So it was bittersweet.
You know, the thing that's tough, Jay, is like he was a really good guy. He seemed to know how to handle New York, but you know what was tough was that he stunk. I mean, for being a Jet fan, he stunk. He wasn't good, and he had so many excuses made for him by everybody around the NFL. He's like the Jennifer Aniston of quarterbacks. When you look at Jennifer Aniston, you go, why doesn't she have a better movie career? Well, she keeps getting chances. Eventually, you have to sit back and say, okay, it's not everybody else's fault but his. It's not all the coaches and the players and the system. Darnold wasn't good, and he wasn't good for the bulk of the time he was in New York.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm a huge Darnold guy. I'll just, in a quick defense of him, you know, Jay, he was drafted by the GM who ended up getting dusted. He was drafted to play for Todd Bowles and an offensive coordinator. They got fired after his first year. So you come in as a rookie, young rookie, learn a system, and then you got to scrap that and go for a new system and work for a guy in Adam Gase who... despite getting the seal of approval from Peyton Manning, was a horrible people person. So Darnold didn't get a fair shake. But I will say this in defense of Darnold as well. I forget who said the quote. I think it might have been Mike Tyson. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. Okay? A lot of these quarterbacks don't deal with any adversity at all. Okay? Carson Wentz is a prime example. Goes to North Dakota State. Awesome quarterback. No adversity. No media scrutiny. And then he gets drafted by the Eagles. Second year, you know, was the MVP leader, goes down with an injury. They win the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz is the next great thing. As soon as he started to stink this past year and they basically benched him, he starts pouting, get me out of here, I'm not a backup. Sam Darnold, to his credit, highly recruited kid, USC, that amazing Rose Bowl game that everybody out here in LA was in love with, one of the great Rose Bowl performances by a young quarterback that I can recall, goes to the Jets. And, you know, he wasn't very good, but he didn't pout, didn't whine, took it like a man. So I think there's a bigger upside for Sam Darnold, say, than a Carson Wentz who cried and moped in Philly when things went sour for him. How you handle adversity, Jason, you know this, being in a tough industry like I'm in, how you handle adversity says a lot about you. And I'm impressed with what I've seen from Darnold.
Yeah, I'm just counting down because it's going to be another 20 years until Peyton Manning screws the Jets again, oh, right? Because he screwed us by staying in at Tennessee his senior year. 20 years later, he recommends Adam Gase. So in another 20 years, we got to watch out for Peyton Manning.
I forgot about
he's going to really screw us.
I forgot about staying in Tennessee. Oh, man. Jerk!
He's going to completely screw us. Look, I feel bad because Sam Darnold seemed to have the right temperament to come into New York and do it and handle the media and handle everything. He just didn't flash. I mean, in a league where in a year we saw all kinds of quarterback records set for touchdown passes, the guy threw 9. You know, he's the lowest rated quarterback in the NFL the last 2 years. I mean, he couldn't throw. He didn't have a 300-yard game this year. Games when you're getting blown out 30-3 and you're throwing the football, you should at least have a couple of 300-yard games by accident when you're losing and you lose, 45-20.
Yeah.
But he couldn't even do that.
You know, the Darnold situation is a double loss, Jason. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
He's going to thrive in Carolina with Joe Brady, who's one of the best young GM, young offensive coordinators in the league, right? And then Kyle Shanahan is picking third. We know his ego and offensive acumen is going to turn Mac Jones or Justin Fields into a star. And here we have Zach Wilson, who, if he's not awesome, well, the Jets screwed it up again. The worst franchise in the NFL. You know we have the longest playoff drought now that the Browns got to the playoffs?
Ugh, yeah.
I'm ticked off.
My entire 40s was absolutely just wasted. It was just a wasteland of the Jets not doing anything.
Flash of Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, right.
I have a Sanchez t-shirt. Yeah.
He won more playoff games on the road than Tom Brady for the long. Brady just passed him like a year ago.
Unbelievable. That's one of the great stats of all time. 4 playoff road wins for Mark friggin' Sanchez.
Fox Sports Radio, Jason Smith, Jason McIntyre. Twitter at How About a Fresca, Jason at Jason R. McIntyre. Coming up next, we got a great story out of the NBA for you. Fox.